The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In the house today are certified financial planners, Craig Konstantinovich and Tony Payne. Hey, guys. Glad to be here with you today.
Yeah, glad to be here with you, too.
We get to see each other all day long, but it's nice to have a personal conversation every week. This is kind of fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
This is a tough topic today for me, at least as a non-CFP, so I'm going to be referring to my outline just a little bit more than I usually do. If you're thinking about real estate investment, we're going to review the landscape as far as big wins, rising property values, rent income, tax breaks, market swings, cash flow hurdles, all those good things. So to win balances, grasp the rewards, and align your choices with your financial goals, we're going to kind of get into it. So it's a lot of things to cover. Talking about defining investments versus ownership, Tony, how does buying a home for personal use really differ from strategic real estate investing?
Yeah, well, I think when we're defining ownership versus investment, I mean, that's a new, very nuanced phrasing. So to just take a step back for a minute, I would say the idea is you're buying a home or renting to have a roof over your head, to have a place to lay down at night. Mm-hmm. So at the core, it's not really an investment in that sense. You might make a little money, it might go up in value, but the idea of it being an investment, that's the nuanced part that we're trying to separate from owning something, an asset, if we can call it that, to actually being an investment. I mean, you may own a home and then decide to rent it out or sell it later. It may be something that turns a profit, but we think it's all in how you go into it, whether it's truly going to be an asset for you or an investment.
There's a lot of content on social media that really addresses real estate as a full-on investment. And that's something we're very aware of in our business day-to-day. As you're dealing with clients, we have these conversations even in our staff meetings. So let's kind of work through the perils of that mindset to see if you can explain the financial goals and outcomes of each one. I think let's give a couple of bullet points.
Yeah, so I think what you're asking is, you know, okay, home ownership. So we've identified that owning a home is not an investment. What it is truly is just a place to live that you can afford to live in. But then you're talking about, okay, well, when do you start looking at getting into real estate investments? What kind of real estate investment should you be looking at? Those kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. So there's multiple ways to look at this, and I'm sure there's other people that have other ways of doing it. But whenever I'm talking to someone or trying to address it is, you know, there's different types of real estate that you can own, whether that be commercial, whether that be residential, whether it be flipping properties, where you're trying to basically buy a place, improve it, and then turn around and sell it quickly for a profit. Or if you're trying to make long-term rental properties, where you're actually trying to get a tenant that's in there that's continuing to rent from you, have that income stream coming in, you're probably not going to be as invested in making that as, you know, picture perfect as humanly possible. Whereas for the flip property, to get the highest dollar and to get the most attractive offer, you may be looking more so to get the better finishes, to make sure that all of the details are properly refined and considered and all of that. And then obviously you also look at the commercial side of things. So, you know, if you are going to be looking at a commercial building that could be used as part of your real estate portfolio, do you want it to be relatively universal and accessible for whatever tenant may be in there? Do you want it to be something that's more niched, like a dentist office? Maybe you need to make sure there's better plumbing in that dentist office. Maybe you need to make sure that there's the ability for a different kind of sinks or stations for people to work at. Or if it's just going to be a general office, maybe it's just, hey, let's make sure we've got plenty of electrical outlets so we can have cubicles lined up and have more of that kind of open air interactive space. So depending on what you kind of view as, hey, here's this specific area of real estate I want to get into, then you can start to decide, okay, well, what property should I be looking at? What's my budget? How do I want to kind of grow this? And then also kind of figure out, well, what other demographics or what other things do I need to consider?
Tony.
Yeah, I agree with you, Craig, there. And to take it back a step, I know we're always philosophical or we zoom out a lot here, but I think it is really important to be deliberate and think about, is this something I want to do as a business? Is this a side stream of income for my goals? That'll lead to how is it even structured? And like you were saying, Craig, how do I even own this thing? Mm-hmm. Whether I own it with partners, whether I own it in a company, I own it with a spouse, or I own it myself. These are all different depending upon what your goals are and what you're signing up for. If you're signing up to be an active manager and run real estate as a business, that's a commitment. I mean, we know it. Real estate is a very fruitful enterprise sometimes, but you have to have some expertise. And along with getting expertise is learning. And part of learning with money in business is losing and having enough capital to be able to do that.
I think that brings me to my next question, our liquidity challenges. So that's mm-hmm. a big one with our clients. How can we kind of talk about the constraints associated with real estate investments and what tips might you have for the liquidity challenges that people might face who are approaching real estate as investing?
Well, if you think about having a stock, whatever Fortune 500 company that there is out there, you're basically saying, let me log in my broker, my custodian's website. I'm going to press a button and liquidate at today's share price, whatever it's trading at. That's really liquid. You're still illiquid in the sense that the value could go up and down. You might have to wait for the trade to settle. But compare that to real estate, where you have to find a ready buyer. Maybe you have to get the bank involved. Maybe there needs to be an appraisal. There can be negotiations on, especially in the commercial world, what improvements may need to be done. What are you responsible for as the seller? So it can be a very involved process that you have to really pay attention to, because it's not as liquid as you might think.
Sounds like you need quite a few professionals in your back pocket for that kind of investing, but we'll get there. Upfront costs and maintenance. Mm-hmm. Let's explore sort of the substantial upfront costs of getting into real estate and how do people manage those, and especially when they're trying to continue to strategize their retirement plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, usually when you start talking about real estate, you know, we here at the company, we have a steadfast rule. No more than 5% of your portfolio should be held into any one individual investment. Whether that's real estate, whether that's individual stocks or bonds, mutual funds, whatever the case may be. But normally when you're talking about real estate, you usually can't get in for pennies on the dollar. You usually have to buy a $300,000, a $500,000, $1 million property to kind of have that pay to play, if you will. So when it comes to that, to your point, Tracy, we want to make sure that whether it's going to be an income generating property, whether it's going to be a flip property, whether it's going to be something that's a secondary business, if you will, or side hustle, just make sure that you have a strong foundation from the very beginning. Make sure this isn't going to be your one-shot opportunity to make or break your retirement. Make sure that you've got, you know, more diversified assets that, to Tony's point, are far more liquid and readily marketable. But when it comes down to it, usually the upfront costs, I know there's always rules of thumbs and there's always caveats to this, but on average, you normally need to be bringing about 25% as a down payment. Now, that varies from a primary residence where you normally need 20% to avoid PMI insurance, but this is an added risk. This is an added expense for whatever lender you're using, so they usually have an increased premium requirement for you to get in. And then again, depending on the property that you're looking at, depending on what improvements, depending on what partners you may have, what the area is like, there can be a number of other expenses that come up, but usually once you have the upfront cost to actually buy the property, then you need to either be working with an attorney to draft up either an operating agreement. If you're going to own this as a business, you may need an attorney to draw up a lease agreement. If this is going to be a rental property, if you have partners that are involved, you need to make sure that you understand what each partner's rights are, and that'll be outlined by meeting with the attorney. You'll need to be sitting with an accountant so they can help you understand what the tax ramifications are of this, how best to structure your entity. So those are usually upfront expenses in addition to just, you know, hey, what color are we going to be painting the house? What, you know, finishes are we going to be putting on? Those kind of things.
You also need to, and I'm speaking from experience, you need to be able to have access to resources that are really reliable. Don't enter into an agreement or an idea that you're going to get rich quick. You've got to be able to have the creativity to see what you want to do and then have the resources and the contractors to back you up. So do your research.
And if you are someone who wants to do it all on your own and this is going to be your business, welcome to entrepreneurship. Remember the definition of entrepreneurship: risk-taking. I mean, with real estate, you are borrowing a ton of money usually. You're committing capital at one rate, what you borrowed, and then you're trying to get that back either in rent, capital appreciation. There is a formula. There is a way to do it where you might be 100% in real estate in different properties or something, but you're running it professionally as a business with your experience. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're a risk taker. And I think that's really important because whether it's liquidity, the mortgages or the capital commitments required, or even the time, that's a big commitment if you're trying to do it all on your own, whether it's the taxes, whether it's the financing, finding tenants, fixing up the property. I mean, we know that people have built empires on real estate, but at the same time, it was a job. They had to put in the time, they had to take risk, and perhaps be able to stomach a lot of losses along the way. So that's why we're here today, is hopefully enlighten people a little bit about how to do it the right way. You know, we know people can do this the right way and do it as a business. But if you're thinking about this, as you said, Tracy, some maybe passive get rich quick thing that you don't have to put in the time or effort for, that's where this risk taking can go terribly wrong.
And it's everywhere. It's all of these social media sites, YouTube blogs, reality shows, you see all these flippers and estate gurus. They make it look so easy.
HGTV or Chip and Joanna Gaines. Right. And it's like, yeah, of course.
Fall into it or they have, what people don't see is that they have a huge network that supports the decision to go into that part of the industry and to support their income. They don't see the resources that they have. So, well,
and if I might add even another point or obstacle, something if you are going into this to be aware of too, is just know the way that the law works. Many rules now are favored towards the tenants. They're favored towards those who might occupy the property or they're going to take over the property later on. So as we continue here today, we'll just keep that in mind too, that if you're doing this the right way, you've really got to be on top of things. Otherwise, you might be exposing yourself not just to the property getting damaged, but maybe being sued or something if there's a fire or damages or children are involved. I mean, the risk there can be astronomical if you're not doing it the right way. So just be aware of that too.
I'd like to address how people can get into, get their feet wet. So somebody comes to you and says, I want to get into real estate investing, whether it be flipping or commercial development, whatever it is. Maybe they propose to you that they want to borrow against their 401k or their investments that they have in place. How do you help people kind of, how do you be the neck that steers the head away from sabotaging what they have in place in order to help even seek this goal to fruition?
Well, there's usually a good reason why they think that's a great idea. So let's ask questions.
Emotional.
And that's usually where I start. Well, it may be financial too.
Yeah.
You know, somebody might look and say, you know what, my 401k the last year has done this. I just read this article about how real estate's doing this. Why aren't I doing real estate? And it seems logical, and that's fair. And that's also part of really, you've got to know your numbers, look at a longer term time horizon, tax benefits, tax deferral. I mean, the idea of real, and I know we're getting there, but the tax laws on real estate have changed dramatically from where they were 20 years ago. So the idea that, am I able to just offset my ordinary income as a doctor or something with all these property losses or depreciation? That's not usually the way it works nowadays. Now, that might have been the case 20, 30 years ago, but that's changed. And as you might have been busy working away, doing your thing, you may not have paid attention. You just noticed the tax bill was adding up or getting bigger. And these are the kinds of things, too, to be aware of, that if you're going to do this, you really need to be involved and commit to it as a professional.
Multiple layers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not just a simple, you know, hey, let's jump into it kind of a thing. It's in all honesty, I usually approach it from the idea of, okay, well, what's your exit strategy? Like, I try to put that idea into someone's head, because that then may start for us to realize, well, what is the best way to structure this business? How do we want to go about preparing for this, you know, rental empire if we build it that way? So I always try to approach it from that standpoint, because, okay, if you are going to have a rental property for 20, 30 years, or you're going to have 7 rental properties that you're going to be managing, well, now all of a sudden it's, okay, well, what's your slush fund or what's your sinking fund to help out with ongoing repairs? Because as soon as one tenant moves out, you got to clean up all the messes that they made and get ready for the next one to come in. You've also got to make sure that you've got money, because just like your house, hey, your water heater is not going to last forever. Your roof isn't so perfect and so indestructible that it's not going to be damaged by hail at some point in time. There's real improvements that you need to make in order to keep this property going. And if that's the case, well, you not only need, like I had mentioned, that 25% down to start, plus all of the fees for your experts to assist you, but you also need to have excess reserves to cover the mortgage if, God forbid, you don't have a tenant, to do some of those ongoing repairs. So that's where I like to focus in on first, is what's the end goal, because that then puts someone more so in the ownership position to say, here's what I'll need to do in order to get to that exit goal.
Excellent. Alternative investment opportunities besides real estate, and this is something that I didn't know anything about until I started working here, so this is kind of fun to talk about for me. What alternative investments offer the similar returns with less complexity? I don't even know if that's possible. So kind of let's give a couple of bullet points, some of the opportunities here, if you want to go through them, what they are and what they look like as compared.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait in the return, but I think there's too many moving pieces there to talk about returns. But we know that people have different options when they've got money. You've got different buckets or different things you could throw it at. You can buy bonds. You can buy stocks. You can buy real estate. Might buy baseball cards. There's a lot you can do out there. And some of the alternatives, I've something like an ostrich farm, you know, ostrich eggs and feathers. And there, you know, there's a lot going on that someone once pitched us.
You're speaking my love language, Tom.
Yeah. Well,
llamas,
but these are
goats.
The things, too, where emotions may get involved. That lack of liquidity gets involved. So, again, depending upon how something's positioned, rate of return may seem higher, may seem lower. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking at a snapshot of the last 3 years of a brand new fund, it's going to look a lot different than a fund that's been around 20 years. It doesn't mean that it's managed any better, but it's a snapshot of what almost what the market has done too. And with some of these alternative investments we've seen, that's where hopefully you're getting in early, or it's something you really enjoy. You're not doing it because you heard about it being a good thing to do or a good investment. I mean, we had a lot of questions about some of the EV car chargers. You know, hey, should I set this up? Should I do this? And now we're seeing a lot of rules change, and even the standardization of, you know, you could have plunked down $300,000 on one of these machines and then find out that all these cars are going to a different standard. I mean, that's the kind of risk taking with these alternatives, that you may be signing up for a lot of debt. It may not be repeatable. So the returns may look better. They may look the same. But the idea to me is, are you diversified? Is it really liquid? Not to rule out alternatives or other businesses, but you've got to keep that in mind.
Yeah. I was going to say, in my mind, alternatives to that point, alternatives are anything that are contrarian to what you typically would invest in. So to Tony's point, whether it be stocks, bonds, mutual funds, anything of the like, an alternative is meant to add a basically an opposing movement to those investments. So in my mind, that's where, again, alternatives typically mean higher risk, which hopefully means higher reward, but it also could mean greater loss. So that's where, again, I had mentioned, you know, we try to really rein people in at times, because yes, good investing done right should be boring. You shouldn't be looking for that, you know, flip property that's going to make you $1 million when you sell it. That's not repeatable. That's not the standard. That's not going to get you where you want to go. Maybe a nice, you know, hey, one time attaboy kind of a thing. But outside of that, you've got to be able to continue to replicate that if you're going to have that as your investment strategy. And more times than not, that's just not plausible. So just be leery, be wary, be aware of what the pros and cons are, and truly try to understand, does this really contrarily work with my portfolio? And if it does, maybe I consider it further.
And don't get your information off the Facebook Chronicles. Go to the pros, mm-hmm. you know, to do your research. Right. How do real estate investments really contribute to wealth accumulation through appreciation, rental income, and tax benefits? I mean, the perfect storm.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think you just said it. I mean, the tax benefits, I wouldn't rely on as much nowadays, but the idea of there's two ways. Either you're getting it through capital appreciation, that property you bought goes up in value, or you're getting it through current income of renting or farming, something like that, or having a tenant if it's commercial. So those are the core ways. I mean, the idea is, are you doing it the right way that you're accounting for all those surprise expenses that we talked about that'll pop up? I mean, the idea is, and you kind of said it there, Craig, the non-correlated phrasing mm-hmm. that people like to use with alternative assets, and especially real estate or some other buckets like that. But to me, as I've gone to the conferences, talked to the experts, you're talking about one world economy. So the idea is, if the economy's suffering overall, yes, stocks are going to go down. We know that. But do you really think you'll be able to charge more in rent? Do you think your ostrich feathers will be worth more? Is your piece of art going to be worth more? I mean, logically to me, these things get pitched as non-correlated assets. But the reality is, if the world economy takes a slowdown or a dip, these things are most likely going to be affected as well. I mean, we can argue about how much or the correlation, but then we'd also have to argue about the trade-off of liquidity and tax benefits mm-hmm. being in a tax-deferred account type. So those are other things to think of.
I'd like you to explain what leveraging is and what the risks and benefits are as far as real estate financing are concerned.
Yeah. Leverage, in its most simple term or simple definition, is using someone else's money to help you out with your investment. So that would be like taking a mortgage out on a property, or maybe pulling together three other individuals that you take their capital, you invest it into a property, and then you promise to pay them back their capital plus interest mm-hmm. in a certain extent. So it's really just taking someone else's money as opposed to your own to put into an investment. So the pros and cons to doing that. So, you know, again, there's a lot of tax benefits that come along with leveraging a rental property.
For whom?
For the actual business owner or the real estate owner in that instance. So, you know, things like any mortgage interest may become or is usually tax deductible. Insurance premiums, tax deductible, improvements, management fees. These are all things, again, you need to review with your accountant to figure out, hey, how much do we really need to assess this? But then the other piece too, as Tony had mentioned, because of the real estate rules that are out there, there may be other pros or cons or gotchas, so to speak, that if you go into this just listening to this podcast or just doing one read over of a book or an article on real estate investment, you're probably going to miss something. So you got to make sure that you're taking a look at that and really understanding, okay, well, if I do make this decision today, and again, to go back to how I approach it, you know, looking at the exit strategy as well, well, okay, if I plan on leaving it to my heirs, does that offer a tax benefit? Does that create generational wealth for them? Am I going to have to pay an exorbitant amount along the way in order to get there? If that's the case, maybe that's not the greatest strategy for me to implement. So there's so many if this, then that, that's where I had, you know, referenced, yeah, you need to have a good team mm-hmm. and you need to make sure that that team is all aware of your primary goal and your primary objective, because if one person's missing it, well, they may give you one bit of good advice that's contrarian or that's bad for where you want to go.
Well, back to the question, leverage too. I mean, you gave a great example. You gave the responsible example. You gave the easy example. It's very logical. I'll borrow money. I'll make money. That's easy. That's leverage, though. I'll give you another example of leverage, though. You ever bought lottery tickets on your credit card? That's leverage. You're borrowing money at 30% for a high-risk thing that might or might not pay off. It's not going to, by the way. But the idea is, you might be thinking, oh my, if I just do this now, I'll pay off that card. I'll get way ahead. I mean, it's the most dramatic, terrible example, but that is the idea of leverage. You're borrowing money, you're putting it to work, and you're hoping for a positive outcome. Now, a logical, nice Craig example there of you have partners, you did your due diligence, you have your team. That's a great way to do it. But then the other side is, hey, I've got my home equity loan. Let me take out money and buy this property in another area of town that I don't really know, and I'm going to rent it out and pay off my mortgage with it. you know, that's oversimplifying it, but I know there are people who have kind of gotten wrapped up and done their surface level research and ended up in that boat. And that's what we're trying to avoid here, because leverage, like getting a loan for a property, allows you to magnify what's out there, but it doesn't mean it's a great investment. You still have to know the numbers behind it to say, am I going to be able to pay off my debt and get ahead? So I think that's really important on the leverage piece.
How do people use real estate to hedge against inflation?
Well, they try to. I mean, the idea would be...
That doesn't even go together with me.
It's common phrasing. I mean, I might say urban legend or myth, or maybe it's real depending upon your study. I mean, everybody can work this a little differently, so I kind of recoil at the question a little. But the idea of how does it hedge, in theory, because you get to change your rent. If rent went up 5%, or if your inflation was 5%, then you increase the rent 5%. So you're able to catch up in that sense. But if you think about it, you're always catching up in arrears. You know, inflation might be 8 or 9%, and then you're trying to raise it the year after to catch up a little bit. So the idea of the capital appreciation then on the other end is the idea that hopefully real estate is going up above inflation, which it typically does. I mean, if you're looking at other asset classes, they do as well, like stocks or bonds, things like that. But the idea is if you were looking at just real estate, yes, it may outpace inflation. But you also have to acknowledge there's other places I could put my money too, where it might be more liquid. I might have more flexibility.
Yeah.
And does that make sense, Tracy?
Yeah, it does.
And I was going to say, even to that point too, Tony, like you had mentioned, maybe it is that true capital appreciation or that, you know, growth, because, hey, this is a growing area. It's thriving. Within the next 6 months, they're going to be adding another dozen developments here. I need to buy this land. I need to build a property here. I need to do that. Okay, well, that may, again, as we had talked about, that may be one time where we outpace inflation. But again, can we take that money, the proceeds that we get, and can we do it again? And can we do it again and again and again? So that's where, you know, to Tony's point, it is somewhat of a common misnomer. But, you know, realistically speaking, yes, there are other investment areas, too, that aren't as risky or aren't as concentrated of a risk as buying real estate and getting into that game.
And again, they just add, maybe simplify too a little bit. You hear numbers thrown around, whether it's the water cooler with the family. You know, if somebody bought their house 50 years ago, that's 1974, by the way. So from 1974 till now, to think about a house doubling in value, sounds great. It does sound great. But then you have to think about how many years was it held? Because if it doubled, that's 100% return. Well, then if I held it for 20 years, I've got to divide that return by 20. That's more like 5% a year. And then you have to think about, well, what were the costs? What was the rehab? What did I put into this thing over those 50 years to keep it? So I think when people know the math and they can back it out a little bit, you start to, oh, well, that seems more reasonable. That, that 3, 4% a year, right about inflation, that tracks. And that's the idea, too, of understanding the numbers. And if you're going to get into this, hopefully you're doing your research, maybe taking some courses. I mean, this is something where it is worth it to not learn on the job, because if you're borrowing money and something goes wrong, you are really stuck.
I really like how you painted that picture for those of us who are not CFPs. That was fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Let's discuss the regulatory and legal considerations. So have we addressed all of those, or are there others that people should keep in mind when they're investing in real estate?
Infinite ones. So I'll just say that. I think we did, because I know I shared the ideas. The rules are all favored towards the tenants nowadays. And if you look at a large state like California even, rents have been officially capped now at 10%. And what we're seeing as a side effect, which some might have predicted, rents are almost automatically going up 10%, because if you don't increase it, and in 1 year you needed to keep up with inflation, you can't increase it 12 or 15%. So what's happening is people are proactively pricing their rent increases at 10%, which is basically the cap in the state. And that's where each state, each city has different rules. And as Craig shared a couple times, having a good team, having experts who know the rules in your area is going to be really helpful.
Yeah. All I would say is the other piece, too, is, you know, there's a lot of people that are out there that may say that they're an attorney or a lawyer. What you really want as you're getting into this is you either want a business attorney to help you understand how your business is structured, or you want a real estate attorney to really help you understand the true litigation or the true risks that are available with real estate and everything else. And you also need a good insurance agent as well to help you identify, well, if you're having home improvements while the tenants are there, who's liable? Where do the potential risks start to come into play? So, like I said, good team members, good people where you can have open conversations. If you can find that, you're already getting yourself ahead of at least 50% of other people that are trying to dabble in this real estate world.
Great point. Certified financial planner is a part of that fantastic team that you're going to need to be successful. Thanks for joining us. It was reviewed the landscape of real estate investing. Remember to do your research as always and seek the help of your professionals. If you're ready to take control of your financial future, we're here for you. Contact us for a complimentary consultation with one of our certified financial planners, and we'll sit down and go through it with you. We're glad you tuned in. We hope you will come back. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.